Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. News.
The government wants to stipulate the right to defend oneself in the Czech Republic. The wearing of face masks on Czech public transport may be mandatory in the autumn. And Facebook is threatening the page of one of the parties in the Chamber of Deputies. The government has backed a Senate proposal to amend the constitution to stipulate the right to defend oneself with a legally held weapon, Minister of Justice Maria Benešová told journalists late on Monday. Hunters, gamekeepers and sports shooters launched a petition to amend the Charter of Fundamental Rights and Freedoms several years ago in reaction to the European Commission's effort to restrict the possession of weapons, including legally possessed ones. Benešová said the decision to back the Senate proposal came after a heated debate. Defence Minister Lubomír Metnar said that he was among the cabinet members who initially were against the proposal, but had changed his mind due to the changing security situation. The EU introduced tighter controls on firearms 2 years after a series of coordinated assaults by Islamist extremists in Paris in 2015, including restrictions on the private use of semi-automatic rifles, a move that the Czech Republic fought in court. Minister of Health Adam Vojtěch said it may be mandatory to wear face masks when taking public transport as of October or November, when the normal seasonal flu could compound health risks stemming from the coronavirus pandemic. Vojtěch said during a tour of Diana Biotechnologies, a firm developing a new device for testing COVID-19 samples, that the incidence of the disease and common respiratory infections will determine whether such a step is necessary. Facebook is threatening to remove the Freedom and Direct Democracy, or SPD, party's page on its website, SPD announced at a press conference on Tuesday. Under threat of removal are also the pages of the party's chairman, Tomio Okamura, and vice-chairman, Radim Fiala. Facebook is justifying the warning based on the party breaching user rules. SPD leaders dismiss the allegation and say they will defend themselves at court if necessary. An official statement from Facebook has not yet been released. The SPD party has long come under fire for posting manipulative content on its social media. The Ministry of Interior's annual reports on extremism have warned in recent years of the important role of the party in furthering racial, ethnic and religious hatred. More than 42,000 foreign workers left the Czech labour market in the second quarter of 2020, newly released statistics from the Czech Labour Office show. That means 7% of the country's foreign workforce was wiped off the labour market from March to June. The Czech Republic entered a state of crisis on March 12th due to the coronavirus pandemic, complicating travel and forcing the shutdown of many businesses. A significant part of the foreign workforce therefore chose to return home, while the process of securing visas for new workers was temporarily frozen. The total number of foreign workers in the country at the end of June lay at 602,500. Mayors from the Karviná district in the Moravian Silesian region, which has now been at the centre of the most serious coronavirus outbreak in the country for several weeks, complained of a lack of information for the local public in a meeting with the region's main hygienist and the governor on Tuesday. People are more afraid of chaos than the COVID-19 coronavirus itself, the Karviná district's chairman of the board of the Union of Towns and Municipalities, Jan Lipner, told Czech television. He said that some people have to wait several days in order to get their test results and that some tests have actually been lost. The mayors want the regional authorities to improve the information campaign so that the ongoing situation is more clear and possible misinformation prevented. And as far as the weather is concerned, temperatures are expected to lie at around 24 degrees Celsius on Wednesday, with rainfall across the country except in the east of Moravia. My name is Tom McEncrow, and that is all the news for now. Hello and welcome to Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. Coming up in today's programme, Czech observers weigh in on whether the Polish election signals a conservative or illiberal shift in Central Europe. An uncensored version of the hit pedophile-catching documentary Caught in the Net is out now. And later we look at Hluboká Castle, the Czech Windsor upon the Vltava. All that coming up, so please stay with us. President Andrzej Duda of Poland, a social conservative allied with the ruling Nationalist Party, was elected to a second term at the weekend by a slim margin. Throughout the election campaign, Duda attacked the LGBT plus community, raising further concern among some Czech political observers of a turn towards illiberal democracy in Central Europe, fanned by those seeking to ignite or exploit a culture war. Brian Kennedy looks into the story.
President Duda, whose promise to protect traditional families resonated especially with Polish voters over the age of 50, churchgoers, and those in rural areas, brushed off concerns of an illiberal slide akin to that in Hungary under Prime Minister Viktor Orban as foreign propaganda. Meanwhile, in Slovakia, the new coalition government under former businessman Igor Matovič, head of the opposition Ordinary People and Independent Personalities Party, or Olano, which includes a conservative Catholic party and a libertarian one, is mulling laws against limiting abortion. Lawmakers themselves span the spectrum. While the EU has warned that governments of Poland and Hungary against disrespecting the rule of law, but is illiberalism really gaining permanent ground in Central Europe? Czech Radio asked political scientists and journalists covering the region to weigh in on the significance of the Polish result and spring elections in Slovakia. Political scientist Zora Hesová, an expert on religious movements and integration in Europe, says the focus on social and cultural issues inevitably draws in more people into a heated debate. They often feel compelled to defend their values against a so-called common enemy and empowered.
The image of the enemy leads people to feel their involvement in politics makes a difference. Defending conservative values and cultural themes allows many people to feel more a part of the process. In Poland, these issues have been part of politics since the 1990s, when the Catholic Church made an agreement with Solidarity and gained enormous influence in politics, banning abortion and returning religious instruction to schools and so on. In Slovakia, the stress on such themes is a more modern phenomenon. Surprisingly, it happened while ex-Prime Minister Robert Fico, nominally a social democrat, was still in power, as he felt he could score some points with conservatives.
It was Fico who enabled the constitutional change in Slovakia to define marriage as strictly between a man and a woman, a flashpoint in culture wars across the globe. But what to make of a new push to restrict access to abortion there? Not too much, cautions Czech Radio foreign correspondent Pavlina Nečaskova. She says that while four related proposals are before the Slovak parliament, access to abortion is a perennial issue and one that the ruling coalition did not seek to form a unified position on.
During my time covering Slovakia, it came up every year. It's nothing new. The author of the draft anti-abortion law with the greatest chance of passing is Anna Záborská, a member of Olano, who has been working on this for 12 years already. Coalition leaders agreed before even forming a government that every MP should vote according to their conscience, and by no means must it take a unified position.
Jak je to v jiných případech, že koalice by měla být skutečně jednotná.
Political scientist Zora Hesová says such issues are often pushed by individual politicians, be they Polish, Slovak, Hungarian or Czech, though they are generally part of global Catholic networks, which have become more active in recent years and often employ similar strategies to attract voters. It is likely a stretch, though, to speak of a seismic shift towards conservatism in Central Europe beyond today's Poland and Hungary, observers say. Culture wars often flare up as part of an effort to conceal real, often socio-economic problems. Much will depend on the political reaction to an economic downturn driven by the global coronavirus pandemic.
And that was Brian Kennedy with that report. Now, Caught in the Net, a documentary mapping how predators target teenagers online, has been the most successful film at Czech cinemas this year, with over 400,000 viewers to date. Now, its makers have released an uncensored version where viewers get to experience the explicit images to which its protagonists, young adult women playing 12-year-old girls, are exposed. Producer Pavla Klimešová told Ian Willoughby why.
We decided to do the 18-plus version because we were confronted by a lot of people that the kids can see this content online and the adults that come to the cinema cannot. And also we met some people who confessed that when they saw the film, it took them a couple minutes to realize that the kids actually don't see it blurred.
People, mainly men, seen in the film trying to target young girls, they're still pixelated in the uncensored version. And from what I've been reading about it, viewers of the original 15-plus version have recognized some of these people, and their voices aren't altered. So why are these apparent predators still pixelated in the new uncensored version?
When we decided to pixelate the faces of the men, it was because we didn't want to put the blame on several people that are caught in our film. But we wanted to open the broad discussion about this topic. And we knew people might recognize them from their voice, friends or family, but they are not going to be lynched outside or in the streets by the people that actually don't know them.
Over 400,000 viewers have seen the original version at cinemas in the Czech Republic. What do you think, Pavla, explains this simply enormous success?
I think one of the reasons why the film is so successful is the topic, because everybody kind of knew that the child abuse online is a problem, but nobody realized how big the problem is. And this opened the eyes of the audience, and because of the topic, the film was mentioned in a lot of media. Everybody talked about it. And another reason why I think the film is so successful is the way it is made. It's targeted for mainstream audience. It's made that even people that usually don't watch documentaries enjoy this film. We have a lot of feedback that some people come to see it again for a second or third time. And I think that's proof that the film is made for the broad audience.
I've had people from other countries asking me when can they see Caught in the Net. What are your plans for an international release for the film?
We are still going through the negotiations with other territories because of the COVID-19 situation. It was a bit delayed. But the film should be released in Germany end of October. And we are talking to other distributors around the world. A lot of territories are highly interested in the film, so I hope that it will be distributed or available online in other territories soon, probably beginning of next year.
And that was the producer of Caught in the Net, Pavla Klimashova, speaking to Ian Willoughby there. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio, where it's now time for our main feature of the day. There is a magical place in South Bohemia. You walk or drive along a river and suddenly you feel like you are in England, more precisely at Windsor. You check the map, make sure that the river is the Vltava, and you are still in Bohemia. Yet the outlines of the castle you see before you look remarkably like the Royal Castle of Windsor near London. That's because you have arrived at Hluboká, where the aristocratic Schwarzenberg family built one of their family seats in the neo-Gothic style. And Vít Pohanka will tell you more about it.
It is quite a steep climb up the hill to the Hluboká castle. In fact, it should be rather called a chateau, because it was built in the first half of the 19th century, long after castles lost their strategic significance. But there used to be a real Gothic fortress here ever since the Middle Ages. I'm now heading to the gates where Helena Remtová of the local branch of the National Heritage Institute is going to tell me a little more about the history of this place.
Hluboká was founded as an old Gothic castle in the 13th century by Czech king Venceslav I. During the centuries, there were 26 mainly local families, for example, Pernštejn family or Malovec. But the most important owners for the castle were Schwarzenbergs, a family from Bavaria, from Germany, and they owned the castle for 300 years, so for the longer period.
What kind of function did it fulfill? Was it a fortress?
It was firstly fortress for Czech kings. But then when lords of Hradec from the south Bohemia region came to Hluboká, they transformed the old Gothic castle into a comfortable Renaissance residence to a castle.
But what we see here now is definitely not Renaissance.
It is neo-Gothic. Because Jan Adolf II Schwarzenberg and his beautiful wife Eleonora visited the coronation of Queen Victoria in England in 1838, and they traveled through many English houses and castles, and they were really keen on the architecture of Royal Castle Windsor. So that's why Hluboká looks a little bit like small copy of Windsor.
I was just going to ask you, I mean, obviously the inspiration by Windsor Castle is very evident when we are standing here. Why was it exactly English? I mean, were they Anglophiles? You know, why didn't they go, for example, to France?
Because Jan Adolf II and his wife really enjoyed the books by Walter Scott, Ivanhoe, Robin Hood, and the Knights. So that was the period from in the first half of 19th century. Yeah, and they were really keen on medieval culture. So that's why Hluboká looks a little bit like old Gothic castle, but it's quite modern chateau from the 19th century.
What do we know about the architects?
There were architects from Vienna, from Austria, Franz Baer and Damasius Dvoretsky, the two main ones. Mm-hmm. Franz Baer was really popular in the 19th century, so that's the main reason why they decided to have this man.
So Johann Adolf II of Schwarzenberg and his beloved wife Eleonor took two top Vienna architects working in the then popular neo-Gothic style. They brought them here to South Bohemia, and this is what they got. A beautiful chateau that looks from the outside like a slightly sinister Gothic castle right out of a Walter Scott novel. But the Schwarzenbergs were also one of the most prominent and wealthy families in the Austrian Empire. Naturally, they expected all the comfort and luxury that the 19th century could offer inside their castle-like chateau.
How often would they be here? How much time would they spend here?
Because mainly all of the Schwarzenbergs were passionate hunters. They used castle mainly during autumn season in the end of October, because they held the big famous autumn hunts here. In spring, they were in Vienna. In summer, in Český Krumlov, and they spent Christmas at Třeboň. It is the small castle. So, near České Budějovice.
So how many people would work here, for example, at that
we
time?
We actually don't know how many people, but we reckon about 30 staff. 30 staff in the castle when was the main season during autumn hunts.
If someone comes here, what can people see around the castle, apart from the castle?
In the surroundings of the castle is a lovely garden and English park. And next to the castle is a big former riding hall, this one. And in this hall is nowadays a gallery. So if you're a fan of culture, of art, so you can find some exhibitions in the gallery.
As we can see, it's Alšová Jihočeská
gallery.
What kind of exhibitions are there?
Mainly local artists, but in some cases impressionism is really popular here. So for example, some artists from France, from Germany is also here.
Now back to the castle itself. What has it got to offer to today's visitor other than the very impressive view from the outside?
Because Schwarzenbergs had inspiration in England, and some of the English castles are covered, the interiors are covered with wooden carvings. That's why Hluboká is so special, because all of these rooms are richly carved by local carvers, and all of the works in the castle took them 30 years. So it was hard to do it. But my opinion is that the most valuable pieces is on the first tour, representative rooms. So our visitors can see library, 12,000 books in many languages. And also it is quite popular to go to Castle Kitchen. So if you are a fan of cooking, it is a good option to you to go there to kitchen. And the last thing that we had, a tower, which is 52 meters high. So there is lovely view to landscape.
Of the landscape around. Yeah. Helena Remtová leads me inside the castle.
We are now situated in a grand staircase hall. So this hall used to be a former third courtyard, and Schwarzenberg decided to transform it to a staircase. So you can see a silk curtain from Italy, and this curtain probably decorated the golden Eggenberg coach. This golden coach is now be seen at Český Krumlov Castle. Český Krumlov was also in the property of Schwarzenberg family, and because the Schwarzenbergs liked to drink tea or coffee, you can see into a tea room. Yeah, it was furnished according to English tea rooms. And this staircase hall is decorated with the portraits which display Schwarzenberg family. And above the door to the library is situated a coat of arms of Schwarzenberg. In the lower part of this coat of arms is head of Turk with the raven. And this motif is there because of Count Adolf Schwarzenberg defeated Turks. And there is a legend that after winning battle, he impaled the head of Turkish commander on a spear. Then the raven flew and started to peck this head. He was quietly, strangely interested by this scene. So that's why Schwarzenberg's had there this strange symbol.
We can see these beautiful wooden carvings. What kind of wood is that? Is that oak? Do we know?
It is oak wood and linden wood, mainly linden wood, because linden is good for carving, soft type of wood.
The whole interior of the castle is an excellent example of the luxurious lifestyle that the aristocracy in the Habsburg Empire enjoyed.
So this room was used for receiving guests. That's why Eleonora decided to have a really precious carving here.
But there are also hints of some tragic events in the Schwarzenberg family history, like a grand portrait on one of the walls.
This lady is a mother-in-law of Princess Eleonora, Princess Pauline from Arnberg. She died tragically in 1810. Pauline and her husband visited the Great Ball in Paris. This ball was held on the celebration of wedding of Napoleon and his wife Maria Luisa from Habsburg family. But in the hall was a fire. Princess Pauline returned back to the burning hall because she thought that inside is her 13-year-old daughter, but she was safely outside the hall. So it is quite a tragical person in the family. And this room is richly decorated with wood, and you can see marble fireplaces. Fireplaces are mainly from Italy. All of the furniture is original. Yeah, nothing is a copy here.
And then there's the Grand Library. It was definitely not just for show. The Schwarzenbergs were known to be polyglot, voracious readers, and they spent many a gloomy autumn evening here.
12,000 books in many languages, mainly German, English, Latin, and also Czech. And the oldest books are from 16th century, the big geographical books about architecture, history, biology. And above the cases, you can see 26 coats of arms of families who owned the castle. The really valuable piece of furniture is here, this table, which is inlaid with nine kinds of wood. Some of the wood is also colored. In the corner is a portrait of a small boy, Adolf Schwarzenberg, the last owner of the castle. Nearby, this big painting is hunting books. So after the big autumn hunts, they counted the number of animal and they written here what kind of animal was killed and in what year. Nice. So the last killed animal is from 1937. this book. Two globes are from Leipzig, geographical and astronomical globe. Ceiling is quite interesting because it was moved from Schwarzenberg Castle. This is the old castle which is situated in Bavaria, in Germany.
Helena Remtová of the Hluboká Castle. And we could go on like this, room by room, for a very long time. For example, there is the armory full of authentic weapons, complete with swords and armor from the Middle Ages, to the 19th century muskets, rifles and field guns. There is also the kitchen, where the servants prepared food for prominent guests from many countries. But above all, Hluboká is a great example of the neo-Gothic style, the kind of romanticism with which aristocratic families that could afford it liked to view the way of life of their ancestors in the Middle Ages while keeping themselves warm and comfortable. From South Bohemia, Vít Pohanka, Radio Prague.
That was Vít Pohanka reporting there about Hluboká Castle, a jewel of Czech architecture, in that feature first broadcast on November 16th, 2018. If you have any comments about today's programme, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that is all for now from me, Tom McEncrow, and I thank you very much for joining us. Goodbye.